May it please the Court, Paul Klavan on behalf of Appellant, and I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. The District Court in this case erred by summarily dismissing the motion without an evidentiary hearing because the record in the case did not conclusively establish that the motion failed to meet statutory requirements. We have a case where my client, Rafael Quiros, is serving a life sentence, and there was no evidentiary hearing, even though two people said that he did not commit the crimes for which he has been convicted.
So what do I have in this record that it suggests that the testimony of Roberto or of the attorney would differ from the declarations presented? Because it seems to me that the district court made this decision saying, okay, I'll assume what they say is true, and nonetheless, I am going to decide this motion.
Well, Your Honor,
I'm trying to say, what is there that they would have said that would have said more than the record?
Well, Your Honor, that is the standard, but the court actually didn't follow that. The court,
just a minute. It seems to me that you're not really arguing the record isn't accurate or adequate, but you're arguing the judge did not make his decision on that basis, right?
Right, because he
that he reviewed the evidence and rejected it.
Yes.
Well, that really doesn't say he needs a evidentiary hearing. That says he misappropriated or misreviewed the evidence, doesn't it?
Well, that also, Your Honor. But
well, it seems to me that then we're not really thinking about whether they needed an evidentiary hearing, but whether he reviewed the evidence correctly. I'm trying to understand your argument, because
right.
I thought the judge went through taking, he said in reviewing the probative force of the new evidence and to the extent which the facts are alleged in the declaration, if taken as true, nonetheless. And you say, no, the nonetheless is wrong. So I don't know why the hearing would have been necessary.
Well, two things. One,
I can get to the point where he may be wrong, and we'll talk about that, but I don't know why the hearing was necessary.
The hearing would be helpful, Your Honor, because part of the argument of the government is that there wasn't enough detail in, for example, Roberto Quiros's declaration. That's something that if there was an evidentiary hearing, Mr. Quiros would be put on the stand, and the counsel could go through all of the evidence that was presented at the trial, and Mr. Quiros would be subject to cross-examination. That would allow both the court and the government to see what the evidence was and to determine whether or not it was enough to show that the conviction should be reversed. That's what an evidentiary hearing would allow in terms of Roberto. In terms of Ernesto Plancarte, I agree with Your Honor that the evidentiary hearing primarily would be to have him show up and testify.
And we don't even know if that'll happen.
Well, we're assuming that'll happen, and that's, again, the standard is that the court should, assuming that the movement, in fact, could establish the truth of the facts contained in the declarations, that, in fact, what the question is whether that would be enough in order to grant the motion.
Well, I guess I have the same issue with it that Judge Smith, I think, is struggling with, and that is that aside from the brother maybe clarifying some things in his affidavit, which you would have had the opportunity to do by means of a clearer affidavit, I'm not really sure what a hearing would accomplish. What else? Are there other witnesses you would have called?
Your Honor, at this point, these would be the two primary witnesses that we plan to call. And again, we have
the same ones that have the affidavits.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, in terms of Roberto, that he would be able to fill in more of the details that the government claims are not provided in the declaration, so that we could show that in fact that my client Rafael was probably innocent of the crimes. Here we have the main.
Is that the standard, or is the standard that no reasonable juror would have convicted? What's the standard?
Well, Your Honor, and it's this is a an area where it's the standard is it has not been quite established yet. But in the Carragher case, and more recently in the Jamello case, this court has said that in cases where you have a freestanding actual innocence claim, that the showing has to be more than just undercutting the evidence, but show that the person is probably innocent. And that's the standard that was used. Again, Carragher, they distinguished between the freestanding and the gateway innocence claim. Jamello, just looking at the actual innocence claim, specifically cited Carragher for the idea that a credible confession by the actual perpetrator of the crime was exactly the sort of evidence.
With the emphasis on credible.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
With the emphasis on credible.
Credible, right. But, Your Honor, in this case we have Roberto, and again the government and the district court tended to minimize that because he wouldn't be, because he there might be a statute of limitation issue. However, he's been a fugitive all these years, and so particularly in connection with the state crimes that he was fugitive from state crimes initially, all that time would be told in terms of any sort of state prosecution. So he would be exposing himself to jeopardy by returning to testify in the case.
I understand that you really don't allege any error, constitutional error, in the underlying trial, right?
Well, that was an initial part of the claim, Your Honor, was the ineffective assistance of counsel having to do with.
Well, I understand that, but as far as the error of the trial, it seems to me that you're really not saying, under the first theory of bringing this claim, if you will, it's a gateway to bringing this claim, you have to have procedurally barred claims. And that constitutional errors occurred at trial. I don't think we have any of those here, do we?
That's right, Your Honor. Based on the ruling and the certificate of appealability that we have here, we're not dealing with that. And the trial court.
And
also,
so, therefore, I have to go to the second theory, on the second or successive. Are you suggesting that that is what we ought to base this on that standard of review?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking even that this isn't really a second or successive, but that we're on the third theory, actual innocence is a freestanding claim.
That was how the...
It seems to be even what you've already argued.
That's right.
Citing Carragher. Well, no court has accepted such a claim as cognizable, have they?
Well, they've assumed, the Ninth Circuit and the Supreme Court have both assumed that such claims are cognizable.
No, they didn't assume. They said, if it is so, we'll rule this. They didn't ever say that it is legally cognizable. They said, we don't know whether it is, but we'll just say it is, and then we'll give you some help. Isn't that what they did?
That is right. What they did, Your Honor, they said that if it is cognizable, this is what you would have to show, and Your Honor is correct that they haven't found such a showing. In this case, though, as I say, we've got the credible confession, which...
Well, before you get to that, I'm trying to figure out what should be my standard of review. It seems to me that if I go with that, you must at least meet the preponderance of the evidence standard.
Right. What in Carragher?
Maybe
they,
further. Maybe more than that.
In Carragher, they seem to be saying it was Schlupp, which is preponderance with a little more, because they distinguish between the gateway innocence claim and the.
Then it should meet an extraordinarily high standard.
They do cite that, Your Honor. Although they seem to apply, as I say, the probably innocent standard that's used in both Carragher. And much more recently in Jamello, and then in the Moores case. Again, all those cases look to the idea that credible confession is significant. And, Your Honor, I see that I'm...
Yes, you may save that, and we'll add a minute to it since we used it up with
right.
Questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the government.
Good Good morning, Your Honors. Kathy Servatius. I'm representing the United States in this case. I was also the trial attorney at Mr. Quiroz's trial, so I'm familiar with the case from the ground up.
Let me ask you the following question. I want you to assume that we review everything in the way most generous to the defendant. That is, that we would review de novo and that all he has to show is that he's shown by a preponderance of the evidence probably innocent. Would we, even under that assumption, reject his claims because of the other evidence in the case, and if so, what is that evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, and when it comes either to the 2255H1 claim of actual innocence, or if it comes to a freestanding actual innocence claim, the Supreme Court and this Court has made clear that it's a probabilistic analysis. It's a holistic analysis. You're taking the evidence that was provided by the defendant.
Right. That's what I'm asking you. Tell me why we should view the evidence in such a way that it's in the government's favor ultimately, even if we apply the most favorable standard that has been requested.
Looking at Roberto's declaration, it's very clear that he wasn't familiar with the charges that were that Rafael was convicted of. Essentially, Roberto claimed that he had purchased or leased all the properties that the labs were located on, not his brother. There was only one laboratory that was even attributed to Rafael Quiroz, and that was one that Mr. Plancardi, who was one of the prime witnesses against the defendant, had no knowledge of. The defendant, Rafael Quiroz, was in the country. He purchased the property in Paris, California. His brother-in-law was found there cooking methamphetamine, and there were all kinds of ties of Rafael Quiroz to both that property, and in fact, Mr. Quiroz himself admitted that he had purchased that property, and ties both to the individuals who were involved in making methamphetamine at the property.
And the financial transactions, I take it, also are inconsistent with the brother's claims.
Yes, Your Honor. There was financial information that was provided. One of the laboratories was located in Sutter County, and Mr. Plancardi testified that his fingerprint was found at that lab, and he testified that he was cooking there on behalf of Rafael Quiroz. There were other individuals that Plancardi identified as well, and during searches of those people's properties back at the time of the laboratory's discovery, those individuals had phone numbers for Rafael Quiroz, and those individuals had wired money to Rafael Quiroz. And Mr. Quiroz, when confronted with that evidence, admitted that he had received those wire transfers from those individuals, but he couldn't remember the reason why they were being sent. So there was other evidence that connected Mr. Quiroz to both the conspiracy, to Mr. Plancardi, and to the drug activity. Some of it connected him with his brother. Plancardi testified that both Roberto and Rafael would on occasions work together and on occasions they would not, and that he worked for both brothers. There was another informant in an independent investigation who worked for the IRS in Mexico, and he testified that Mr. Quiroz, both Roberto, Rafael, and some of the other brothers, had come to Mexico to exchange money. And so he testified that the brothers had admitted that they were involved in drug trafficking, and he identified Mr. Quiroz as one of the individuals who was involved in, I think they exchanged approximately $200,000 in U.S. currency, and that it was Rafael Quiroz who told that informant that he wanted to set up a money exchange in Los Angeles so they wouldn't have to bring it across the border. So this is the type of evidence that isn't accounted for in Roberto's declaration. In addition, Roberto's declaration fails to even set forth his competence to know what his brother was involved in when he wasn't involved with Roberto. So all he would say is that Rafael Quiroz had a ranch in Mexico. But Rafael
Quiroz... He says at one point sort of generically, my brother wasn't involved in methamphetamine or something like that. I mean, he has a sort of general, my brother's an innocent, nice guy.
Correct. But if he's not in constant communication with Rafael Quiroz, how would he know what Mr. Quiros is involved in when he's not around. And so that doesn't undercut Plancardi's testimony that there were times when Rafael Quiros was involved in meth manufacturing and Roberto was not working with him. Does the court have any other questions?
So as to Plancardi, what do we say about his recantation?
I think what the court has to treat it as is somebody would testify that Plancardi claimed that he made up that Rafael was responsible. Not that Plancardi recanted, but it's more of an impeachment statement, that at a later time Plancardi said what I said wasn't true. And when evaluating that claim, once again, the court has to take into account the timing of it, the circumstances of it, and the likely effect it would have at a trial. If the testimony was by this unknown...
Well, as I understand, his statement was said to an unidentified relative. Is that so?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that he refused to come forward himself?
According to the relative.
And he originally said that both the defendant and Roberto did the crime, and now he changes to only Roberto. Is that it?
That's what the unknown relative claims. So if the unknown relative were to testify at the trial in light of all the evidence that was presented at the original trial, what would the likely effect be on a juror? Would no juror be able to convict the defendant in light of the fact that 10 years later, Mr. Plancardi gave an excuse as to why he testified the way he did? And I think that that's what the district court was evaluating and what the standard is. Could no juror convict if this additional evidence was before it at trial?
Well, I think we also have cases that talk about the suspect nature of late recantations.
And that is something that goes to the reliability of the new evidence. And that's something that the district court...
Especially here with Plancardi, in that he's now served his sentence, right?
Correct. And he's now back with the individuals that he lived with trying to explain or perhaps curry favor as to the government made him do it. So I think that although even assuming there was an actual innocence claim that was freestanding, this is one of those cases that the court has repeatedly found that the evidence isn't sufficient. Even in Carriger, that was both the gatekeeping claim and a freestanding claim. And although this court found that a credible confession was sufficient for the gatekeeping claim, even that was not sufficient for a freestanding claim in light of the other evidence at trial.
It's also my understanding that there was really no evidence that any of the meth labs were on leased property.
That's correct. Some of the statements that Roberto made did not fit with the actual evidence at trial. Mr. Quiros admitted that there were several residences in the United States that he had leased at various times. These residences became part of the government's evidence as showing that the other conspirators were in connection or in relation with Mr. Quiros during the time of the activities. However, the only properties that the government had presented as evidence at trial, Mr. Quiros actually admitted that he leased the residences, but no labs were found on them, and that the residence where the lab was found, that he had been the one to purchase it.
The Paris property.
Correct.
I also understand, I'm just trying to make sure, because I'm trying to compare the affidavit to what I think the evidence was, that there was no evidence that the military ID or the passport or the residency card or the work permit were ever used to engage in the transactions of the drug conspiracy.
Correct. The only time identification became an issue and distinguishing between both Roberto's and Rafael's was with wire transfers, and it would be very clear which identification was used, either the fake Rafael Quiros, which was Roberto, or Rafael's. In addition, there were currency transaction reports that indicated that Roberto Quiros had used that identification. But again, that evidence wasn't ever attributed to Rafael Quiros and was never even connected to the conspiracy. So in this case, although Roberto is attempting to take all responsibility for the crime, given the fact that his confession has so many errors or inconsistencies with the trial evidence, and the fact that it is so general, it just isn't the type of reliable evidence that would be sufficient to support a freestanding claim or a claim under 2255H1.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Klavan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Regarding Mr. Plancarte, what the declaration, the affidavit shows is that he originally was just testifying, had information about Roberto, but the government wasn't interested in that information. Roberto, they didn't know where he was. They had my client in custody, and that is the nature of the claim, is that the government was only going to give him the significant reduction in sentence from 30 years down to 10 years if he identified Rafael and not the brother Roberto. And so all of the evidence was focused on Rafael from Mr. Plancarte, and although the government said that there was other evidence, circumstantial evidence, Mr. Plancarte was the one that the government relied on to show how the whole organization worked. And
well,
he was the one.
What you're really arguing, it seems to me, is he lied the first time to get a deal, and so this is good evidence we ought to rely on?
Yes, Your Honor, because
it seems a little tough for me to say he lies the first time to get a deal, but now he doesn't lie anymore when he has now served his sentence. I'm just having a tough time with that idea.
Well, he's certainly exposing himself to perjury charges by coming up and testifying to the contrary, Your Honor.
How do we evaluate the reliability or the credibility of this statement that Plancarte has made to a relative, who's made to an attorney, who's presented to the court, that it's sufficient to warrant the relief that you request?
Well, again, the district court, they're supposed to consider, you know, what the movement would be able to show if everything were true. Now, obviously, we have to get Mr. Plancarte here to testify about this, and that's something that has to be dealt with down the line. But in terms of what he would be able to say, we need to assume that, in fact, he would say that. And even though the court has expressed concerns about recantation testimony alone, in this case, the recantation is reinforced by the confession of Roberto, who has not testified before.
Should we evaluate Plancarte's proposed testimony, as the government has suggested, as potential impeachment from the unidentified relative?
Well, yeah, it would be impeaching his own testimony and also reinforcing the testimony of Roberto. And what happened with the district court is that after rejecting completely the Plancarte testimony, the court then used that also to undercut the confession of Roberto. And even though, again, the government said, well, there's different testimony in terms of the property, but the government's focus was on Rafael, and so whether there were other properties that were leased by Roberto, they didn't focus on that. They focused on the one property that, in fact, and that's the Paris property, right, Your Honor?
Do you agree, though, that some of Roberto's affidavit or declaration, the statements in that, are incorrect, and when compared to the evidence presented at trial?
Well, again, for the most part, there wasn't a focus on who leased the property or who owned it, except when they could pin it on Rafael. The government was not trying to show that Roberto was doing anything. That was contrary to their interest. The defense counsel, to some extent, was trying to suggest that, but there was not much to go on. There were a few times where there was this identity issue. It wasn't connected specifically to Rafael, and so it really didn't amount to much of anything in terms of undercutting the government's case.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks. The case just argued is submitted, and we appreciate very much the arguments of both counsel.